It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I am Tony Vernetti from Feds, Federal Employee Defense Services, and I am filling in again for the attorneys at Shaw, Bransford, and Roth who are unavailable today. And I'm very pleased. My co-host today is Jenny Mattingly, who's the Director of Government Affairs at Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. And Jenny, I'm going to embarrass you a little bit, is fresh back from maternity leave.
That's right. Jumping right in.
Just had her second son, Brandon. Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And our guest today for the show is Chris Schottmeyer, the Vice President for Agency Affairs with the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, or the acronym we'll use frequently today, FLEOA. And for those of you who are frequent listeners to Fed Talk, you know that we do about three or four, sometimes five shows a year with FLEOA to update our listeners about FLEOA's a lot of legislative activities that they have and the other important work that they do for on behalf of federal law enforcement officers. We usually have John Adler on, who's the national president, but John is on a big Caribbean vacation, much deserved. I'm not sure where he is, but he is unavailable, and we're thrilled to have Chris on the show, some new blood, if you will. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tony, and thank you, Jennifer, for having me.
Just a reminder that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. If you'd like to join our discussion today and speak directly to our guests, you call our toll-free number at 1-877-936-9333, or you can always email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. That's fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Chris, I always like to start the FLEOA shows because we may have, you know, folks who are unfamiliar with your great association, or maybe you're new to federal law enforcement and want to get more involved. If you can just introduce FLEOA for our listeners, that'd be great.
Sure, Tony. FLEOA is the, as you said, the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, and we are a association, not a union. I'd like to make that clear. We represent 26,000 plus members from over 65 federal agencies across the full gamut of federal law enforcement. We can be found on the web at www.fleoa.org. The mission of FLEOA is to, represent the agents, but we provide not only the legal services, but we also have a strong presence on the Hill on the legislative front. And we're also very involved in working with other NGOs and such as the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund and helping out with such initiatives as the Law Enforcement Appreciation Night.
No, and that's important. We're going to get into a lot of the legislative initiatives. But like any organization, your strength is the strength in numbers.
Right.
So, you know, you can't just sit back and think, you know, look, I'll get the benefit from the advocacy that the group is doing, even if I don't join. That's not true. You need to be involved. You need to be a voice. You need to help them, you know, forward those initiatives across. So that's something, you know, I always echo in here. So I encourage folks who are listening out there in federal law enforcement who are not members to really get on FLEOA's website and strongly consider joining. As Chris, you mentioned 65 agencies that FLEOA represents. And when I started the show, I introduced you as the vice president for FLEOA's agency affairs. But you have a day job. You're That's also right. a special agent for an agency called NOAA. Right. So I'd like to give you an opportunity just to introduce your agency to our listeners, because until now, You know, I think, as my 8-year-old daughter would say, that's the agency that killed the mermaid.
Right. Yeah. And actually, you know, I was some surprised about that myself, Tony. And if that is all true, I'd probably resign.
I joke about the mermaid thing. Let me get this clear, because I'm not in the federal government. You know, I do want to know how much taxpayer money went into investigating it. But NOAA does a lot of great work. Yeah. And I'd like for you to talk, you know, a little bit about that and some of the other related agencies.
Well, as you said, I'm a special agent for NOAA. I have been for 26 years. I've been in the federal law enforcement community. My entire career has been in the conservation law enforcement side. I first started with U.S. Fish and Wildlife as a wildlife inspector back in the early 80s and moved on as a refuge officer. And then in the late 80s, became a NOAA special agent out of Gloucester, Massachusetts. And then eventually my duty station now is New Hampshire. NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, does a lot of really good work. As you said, you know, we not only from the law enforcement side, but I think more recently, most people equate NOAA to what happened with the Gulf oil spill. You know, we were one of the significant organizations, agencies that was involved down there. And we are comprised of right now about 113 NOAA special agents across the United States, its territories and possessions. What's interesting is we're the marine side. We do the saltwater side. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is our sister agency, our kin agency, and they do all the inland all of the mammalian side of it for inland species and ducks and deer and everything else. And I often say, Tony, that if you take NOAA and U.S. Fish and Wildlife agents collectively, we have about 350 agents, and we have more FBI agents in Boston than we have NOAA and U.S. Fish and Wildlife agents to cover the whole United States and its territories.
Wow. It seemed, you know, and I consider myself knowing a few things. I didn't know that NOAA was involved in the Gulf spill.
We were with the Coast Guard, the EPA. We were one of the, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, obviously.
Right.
But yeah, we were heavily involved down there.
And for those who like to follow along with the acronyms, your parent agency is?
National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. We're part of the Department of Commerce. Interestingly enough, we were not part of the Department of Commerce back in 1976. We were part of the Bureau of Sport Fisheries and Wildlife, which was the predecessor to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And back then in 76, we broke away and went to Commerce. We were the Division of Commercial Fisheries Enforcement. And there is currently a study being done by the GAO to see about the feasibility of merging NOAA back into the Department of Interior and obviously into the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
That's interesting. I always say if you trace all agencies, you can trace all agencies back to three departments, Treasury, State, and the War Department,
right,
you know, eventually.
Right.
Let's shift a little bit. Let's talk about, introduce, before our first break here, let's introduce some of the legislative initiatives that FLIOA is working on. And a big one that you hear, and it's throughout the federal government, is pay and benefits. And there's the pay freeze that the president has implemented. And, you know, there's all these talk about changing benefits for federal employees across the board. How is that impacting law enforcement?
Well, it has had, you know, it has had an impact on law enforcement. And one of the things that we've been working with Congress, we realize that, you know, there are going to be some monumental changes that will most likely occur here in federal pay and benefits, and certainly we're not going to be immune from that. But one of the things that we were looking to do is work with Congress to carve out some kind of a program for federal law enforcement for pay and benefits. And, you know, we're working very close with the Government Oversight Reform Committee on this on the House side, and we're hopeful that we can work with them. You know, Tony, when it comes to federal law enforcement, anybody that's in the public safety arena, there are a lot of sacrifices that are made. And not that we're special from federal employees, but we do make a lot of sacrifices. So we are looking to work with Congress and trying to get a pay and benefit package that would be something that, you know, we can live with.
No, and that's a question I would have, just playing devil's advocate. You know, I'm a federal employee, you know, out there, and, you know, the economy is pinching us, you know, everywhere. What makes you special? And I think those points, you know, are well taken. You know, given the extra hours, a lot of people don't appreciate what you're working. Like I always used to say to new lawyers, you know, work for me at a law firm, you know, no matter how bad things get in the courtroom, nobody's shooting at you.
Right.
You know, and, you know, people who are in federal law enforcement putting themselves, you know, in harm's way, you know, there is a little bit of a difference. And you know, it goes to morale and recruitment, you know, and things like that.
Well, and there already is some difference in how law enforcement officers are paid or categorized within the government as well. So it's not entirely from Fleo's point of view, I would think.
No,
Jenny, out of the ordinary.
Yeah. Jenny's right. Absolutely right. I mean, you're treated differently for retirement. Right. We talk about LEAP, you know, all these, you know, special kind of benefits for a reason.
Yeah, I mean, we you know, as you know, all 1811s have to retire at the age of 57, you know, for the criminal investigative series. So that means you can't become an agent after 37, and you have to retire at 57 so that you'll have the formula of 20 and 50 at a minimum.
And for those folks who don't know, can you real quick just say what an 1811 is?
Yeah, 1811 is a series in the federal government that covers all special agents, criminal investigators, whether you're the FBI or you're an OIR agent or IRS or you know, ICE or whatever. I mean, Immigration Customs Enforcement, 1811 is the special agent series.
Right. We're going to take our first break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And we're talking to Chris Schottmeyer from FLIOA about the important work that FLIOA does for federal law enforcement officers and the entire community. We'll continue our discussion after this break and a word from our sponsor.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com. Then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jenny Mattingly, and today I'm here with Chris Schottmeyer, who's the Vice President for Agency Affairs at FLIOA, and my co-host, Tony Vernetti. If you have a question or a comment, please give us a call toll-free at 1-877-936-9333 or email us your questions at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. And when we left off, we were talking about some of the pay and benefits issues, and I think one of the biggest things I hear government-wide, and I know law enforcement officers are no different, are some of the retirement proposals, and especially you were telling me you're closing in on retirement age, and they're talking about changes to FERS and to CSRS. They're talking about going from a high 3 to a high 5, which a lot of federal employees, is this something that FLIOA has been on the front lines out there doing?
Yeah, and the thing is, Jenny, again, working with the you know, with the Oversight and Government Reform Committee, I mean, we're pressing our case there to you know, accentuate those areas where, you know, we provide a service, you know, to the public that you know, not everybody has to get up in the morning and you know, go out there and enforce the law and have to worry about coming home at night.
Right, and I think just kind of jumping in there, I think there have been, unfortunately, several law enforcement officers, federal law enforcement officers, who have been shot in the line of duty this year already.
Well, you know, starting December 31st, we've never seen this before, but I believe it was the first 5 law enforcement officers that died in the line of duty this year were federal.
Right.
It was a terrible start. It was all happened, you know, right in January.
Yeah, and I think we lost an FBI agent on the last day of December, I believe drowned down in one of the islands, I think Puerto Rico.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then we lost an ATF agent.
That's,
you know,
a tragic case up there in New York and the pharmacy.
Right.
You know, New Year's Eve.
Margaret Anderson.
Breaking up a robbery and unfortunately, you know, another police officer coming on the scene.
Right.
not really appreciating what was going on, and you know, opened fire and mm-hmm. you know, killed Friendly. You just hate to see that. But that's yeah. that's the line of work.
Well, and the other one too that I just mentioned was Margaret Anderson, and the reason I mentioned that too, and I'd like to talk to that point a little bit is that Margaret's a park ranger, and kind of tough to talk about,
mm-hmm.
But she lost her life, you know, out in Mount Rainier National Park. And she was there, a person had gone through a checkpoint to go to the high country, and she stopped him to make sure he had the proper equipment and never even got out of her car. And she was killed right there. The reason it's important is that both Margaret and her husband were both FLIOA members. And to that end, FLIOA also has a foundation. And, you know, it's separate from FLIOA itself, but it is the FLIOA Foundation, and you know, we're there in time of need for people like that too.
And yeah, we should have mentioned that a little bit at the beginning of the show about the FLIOA Foundation, and I can tell you my company, you know, Feds, is a big supporter and sponsor, you know, of it. And it for those of you who are listening and want to consider contributing to it, every dollar that's given to that foundation is given out or reserved for benefits. Mm-hmm. Not 1 cent of any real overhead is taken. And, you know, if you know anything about how charities operate and foundations, you know, operate, that's really unheard of. And, you know, that's because of, you know, what the benefit does and how important, you know, it is to your membership to be there, to be able to respond, you know, in a situation, you know, like Margaret's, you know, and again, it goes back to what we said about, you know, a lot of folks don't, we were talking before we went on the air, you know, all these different agencies where folks are, you know, are federal agents, federal law enforcement, you know, officers, you know, and she was, you know, a park ranger,
right.
You know, a lot of people, you know, on the couch wouldn't identify, you know, them, you know, as somebody who needs to, worry about being shot at.
What's important too about the foundation too, Jenny and Tony, is that the foundation is also a part of the combined federal campaign, and all federal employees, I'm sure, are aware of the CFC, and that it's a good way to make a contribution through the CFC to the FLIOA foundation, and you know, we hope that more people will continue to do that.
And going back to the pay and benefits, mm-hmm. You know, issue. You know, I think we've laid the foundation and talked a little bit, you know, about why, you know, maybe, you know, law enforcement should be treated differently. Jenny pointed out, you know, they're already treated differently for retirement purposes, you know, and these things. If they don't respond mm-hmm. to that, what do you think the fallout is going to be?
Well, I think one of the immediate areas you're going to see is you're going to see less recruitment, successful recruitment and retention. For instance, if you have the opportunity to go to local law enforcement, not every local law enforcement agency, but some of the bigger cities that are comparable in pay and structure, you know, we could probably lose some really good people who will leave the federal mm-hmm. government to work in other areas. Mm-hmm. As you know, you know, when it comes to a lot of the local and state entities, they have the ability to get overtime, you know, whether they're working a road job or whatever. And you don't see that, you know, in my agency, I don't see that, where we can go out and supplement our salary that way and have that count towards our retirement. So if they really tighten it down, you'll probably see the retention become a real problem and the recruitment that will follow.
Well, and I think that's a good point is, and I'm hearing this from every group of federal employment associations, is the retention issue. Mm-hmm. And especially with law enforcement, you can retire early.
Right.
And so I'm wondering if FLIO is hearing from its members that why stay?
Right. Well, and both ways. You know, because the economy the way it is, mm-hmm. there are a certain segment of our membership that would like to have seen the mandatory retirement age raised.
Right.
Partly that was because, let's face it, if you're going to mandatorily be retired in a down economy, it's not a good thing. but the flip side of that too, though, is if you can go to another, another department, state, local, whatever, and you can get a good salary, and then you can continue to build on your retirement and work a regular shift.
67 could be the new 57.
There you go. Right, exactly.
as they say. Right. But I joke about that. But the important aspect there is part of what federal law enforcement officers, bring to the table is their specialized expertise, like what you do,
right.
The different areas and the years, of being, involved in that. It's not all, let's kick down the door, type of work. And this way, you won't be able to lose that valuable asset,
right.
Or there will at least be an option there, which is why you see, agencies, when TSA stood up, they allowed reemployed annuitants to come back, because they wanted to, they had that brain drain and they wanted to be able to bring, that kind of quality people back in the agency. But that's what I see happening. Jenny talks about early retirement. It's 20, and if you have 20 years in 1811, 6C, you can go at age 50.
Right.
All right.
Right.
And that's a very young age. And, we were talking about CSRS versus FERS. Right. I don't think there's any CSRS agents left, but that was the old retirement system.
Except for the one that's sitting right here.
Are you one? Good for you.
There are still quite a few that are CSRS.
I think I'm one of the few in NOAA, but yes.
Right. That was the golden handcuff retirement. But the FERS, which is more portable, more like the private sector, it's the hybrid of the three, the annuity, Social Security, and your TSP. A lot of agents are saying, why should I stick around?
Right.
There are plenty of good jobs in the private sector. I take my experience.
Yeah.
You're very attractive, in the consulting security market, jobs overseas. And that's what they're going to see happening. If they start taking these, and this leads me into the next subject matter I want to talk about, not only if you start freezing things, and there's already that with promotions. I mean,
right.
With capping out with the federal pay, GS-14s,
right.
GS-15s. It's not, in your interest to take, a SAC or an SES job. But if they start taking benefits away,
right.
Which I want to move into the Senate Bill 1789, which is, trying to reform a little bit of the OPM disability retirement.
Right. Well, what's interesting about that is that, here we are, the postal reform legislation, yet, Senator Collins introduces or tacks on to that a area where it would affect the Federal Employees Compensation Act. And, FLIOA was opposed to that. Essentially, what you're talking about is taking our disabled heroes who have served and heroically here. 9/11 is a good example, Jenny and Tony, where people have been hurt, but have been on Social Security, and what they'd like to do is once they reach the certain age, that they would turn around then and they would have to come out of the Social Security and go into a disability program that would be obviously a lot less pay that they would receive. And it passed in the Senate, but we're working vigorously with the House to address this issue, and we're hopeful that we supported the Klein-Miller bill, H.R. 2465, and we are working aggressively on that to make sure that our heroes aren't taking a slap in the face.
And just to do a little background for some of our listeners on the reform that we're talking about, or FICA, as a lot of people call it, on the Hill, I think the bill that Senator Collins originally introduced would take employees and move them back into the FERS system, and
right.
So they wouldn't have had TSP or Social Security or any of that, so they're basically coming back in, way lower level. And the Klein-Miller bill makes technical and some very necessary changes to the program, but it does not address that, whether you switch people off of the FICA compensation onto back onto the regular retirement. And that's been a big issue for federal employees, especially the law enforcement officers.
Right. Well, you have to understand, we're talking about FICA, we're talking about primarily workers' comp benefits. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and understand the policy point behind it. And Jenny's point is great about not being contributing to the TSP and that stuff. But the main policy behind it, it's essentially a strict liability benefit, because mm-hmm. it's not in good public policy to have your employees suing your employer when they get hurt in the workplace for what's called common negligence.
Right.
So we set up these strict liability programs, these worker comp, you know, type programs that if you're injured, you know, on the job, this is your sole benefit. Right. This is your sole remedy that you get is through FICA, the Federal Employees Compact, and it's making up for, you know, the ability to say that you cannot sue, right, you know, your employer for what's called common law negligence. And I understand where Senator Collins and the others are coming from, that look, they're on the rolls for a very long time. Shouldn't we convert them, over to the retirement? You know, I get where that's coming from, but I think it loses the point Jenny made, you know, about TSP, and it loses this policy point, you know, that I'm making about workers' comp and workers' comp in general.
But, you know, Tony, why are we making this so difficult? You know, FLIO has been involved with FICA for a long time now, and, you know, our legislative affairs vice president and several other FLIO members here in the Washington, D.C. have been very, very aggressive in that area. And it comes down to this. It comes down to the person that, you know, injures their back or something like that, you know, in a federal agency, and not to de-minimize a position that would be like that, say a custodian type position. You know, if they go out on workman's comp, the guy that got shot in the line of duty, he's not coming back in 6 months. It's going to be 2 or 3 years before he's back, if he's coming back. And, you know, to me, I don't understand why workman's comp just won't create a separate category for federal, for firefighters and law enforcement.
Yeah, and that goes back to, you know, I think the point Jenny made is that you're treated differently for all these other reasons, for very good reasons, you know, retirement, you know, overtime pay. You don't get normal overtime pay. Right. There's a special way to do it. You know, this is part of pay. You know, not only, you know, does that make sense, but also makes sense because you have unique injuries, PTSD, right, post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, if you're a fire investigator, arson investigator, you know, you showed up to some pretty horrific, you know, scenes. You can see, you know, injuries manifesting themselves from that. So there are a lot of reasons.
But this program doesn't, the way it's set, and I think that's one of the things that people talk about FICA, is it doesn't make any distinction between how you were injured or when you were injured.
And
or,
what they're trying to do on the other side, and I'll tell you, having worked for a federal law enforcement agency, is federal law enforcement agencies are the hardest hit by the workers' comp. That's, you know, a lot of money coming off their budget. We have to stop here for our second break. We'll continue with our discussion after this break and a word from our sponsor. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
I'm Bill Bransford, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Fed Talk brings you inside information on hot topics in the federal community. From the halls of Congress to federal agencies, get the latest on the laws, regulations, and activities that directly impact federal employees. Tune into Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM as we bring in the experts to bring you inside the issues.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jenny Mattingly, and I'm joined by Chris Schottmeyer from FLIOA and my co-host Tony Vernetti from Feds to learn about the top issues. And we've been talking about top issues in legislation right now affecting law enforcement officers, and we'll continue that discussion. But if you'd like to join us, please give us a call at 1-877-936-9333 or email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. And when we left, we were talking about FICA reform and how workers' comp reform and how involved FLIO has been on that. But there are some other items as well that I know you wanted to touch on that FLIO has really been active on the Hill.
Yeah, the one area I really would like to cover, too, is the Officer Safety Act of 2012, which in the Senate is, for our listeners, is Senate Bill 2276. On the House side, it's 4309. And essentially what it is, this kind of arose out of the situation that happened with Agent Will Clark in the Virgin Islands, in that he was going to be prosecuted by the local jurisdiction down there where he had to employ deadly force to save a woman's life. This legislation would then remove, if a similar situation happened, would remove it out of that jurisdiction and into a federal venue. And we're working very aggressively with that right now. There is an anonymous hold on the bill from one of the senators. So we're working aggressively to get that removed. And I think that's a real important piece of legislation because, let's face it, we have agents that are in areas that are not here in the United States. They may be territories or trusts of the United States, but, you know, we need to make sure that they're protected.
Just to highlight a little bit of that case, the Will Clark situation, to understand why this is very important. You said he was going to be prosecuted. He was being prosecuted. Mm-hmm. And the issue of, you know, there are a lot of rules in place, federal law and supremacy clause and all these things. Constitution still applies in U.S. territories. But a lot of people didn't realize the decision to remand the case back to the Virgin Islands is what we call an unreviewable decision. You can't get it. Can't get an appellate level review and Supreme Court from that. So the request was made to move it to federal court out of the state jurisdiction, basically saying that there was important federal question needed to be answered, the supremacy clause. In this case, and you know the judge remanded that back. Before the state court, rendered their decision, which if you follow the case, you know, essentially said the Constitution doesn't follow the flag. Not every provision of the Constitution is applicable in the Virgin Islands and the U.S. territory, mm-hmm. Meaning the supremacy clause. So they did go forward with the prosecution. Now, had that decision been rendered before they requested to remand and remove the case, I wonder if it would have turned out differently. But I mean, that was just a perfect storm where you had a federal agent, responding in an emergency situation, identifying domestic violence, identifying himself as a federal agent, having to take lethal force. And not to say that shouldn't be looked at in all cases and shouldn't be investigated, to see, if that was proper, but he couldn't get the federal question answered, mm-hmm. and that was serious. And ultimately the case got dismissed on a very sort of strange technicality involving an evidentiary issue, about with the evidence and train with the body and things like that, but it underscored this particular issue. Is the bill going to make it automatic, or is there still going to be that discretionary element in it?
I'm not real familiar with the real contents of the bill other than what the intent of this bill is, and I really couldn't comment on that, but I think right now with this anonymous hold on it, we need to move quick, as we know the number of legislative calendar days are closing in. So we'd like to get it through in this session if we could.
Okay. And, I think that's going to be the trick, is trying to move anything forward. Right. So this is one of those pieces of legislation that you keep working on and hoping it goes forward. But I think Tony's right. The intent is to try to create sort of one place, answer that question of where is it going to be.
And that's interesting. Just the legislative process, people don't appreciate, you know, that you've got to keep at it, you know, and even bills, you know, the Congressional Medal of Honor, the honor for federal law enforcement officers, which was no cost,
right?
You know, legislation. Even that took years
just to get the rules to implement.
Right.
It took a while.
Right. So it's like you have to keep on these things, and that's why it's important to stay involved. With FLIOA and you know, write your congressmen and senators accordingly.
So quickly, I'd like to just also bring you up to speed, our listeners, on the H.R. 3668, which is the Counterfeit Drug Penalty Enhancement Act. The bill was introduced by Congressman Meehan, and he's a friend of FLIOA, as a former assistant U.S. attorney. The legislation would raise the penalties for violation of this act and will serve as a legal tool to help agencies that enforce the drug laws to help combat the prescription drug fraud and distribution, which, as we know, has become a real problem here, in addition to the controlled substances.
And side does seem to be growing. There's a lot of, you keep hearing the stories about prescription drug abuse. And also, I think as healthcare things are moving through, you know, there's been a little bit more of that fraud and abuse side.
Well, it really touched home for us. Just as a side note here, a few months ago, we had a police chief in Greenland, New Hampshire, that was gunned down. Drug task force was executing a no-knock warrant on a subject that was involved with interstate transportation of steroids. And it turned into a very fierce gun battle with four drug task officers, mostly local officers, that were injured during the gunfight, but the chief from Greenland lost his life, Mike Maloney. And again, it was prescription drug activity.
People forget that that's become such a big money industry all
of a sudden. I mean, you'd be surprised how much DEA, how much effort, and work and, you know, that they're putting forward, you know, efforts to combat that. Most people think of, you know, the DEA, think of Pablo Escobar, and we're fighting the war on drugs, cocaine, and things like that. But this, you know, I've got a good friend of mine, you know, a lifetime friend who's a DEA agent, and, you know, he solely works cases, you know, these prescription drug fraud type cases now.
And it's been there for a long time. I also have a good friend who does the prescription drug side, and, you know, they've been doing that for years, since the 70s. And I think people, again, it's one of these things where you have pictures of law enforcement officers from, say, TV or for something else, and you think of those and not all these other things.
And it's across the board with federal agencies. Right. I mean, Health and Human Services and special agents are involved in this. DEA, ICE is involved. I mean, there's so many federal
task force
activities that are trying to combat.
Well, and then everything, you know, post 9/11, you know, everything is about national security, because you know, you're also doing, you know, through this process, you know, you have things like terrorist financing, you know, money laundering and things like that. So there's a lot of moving parts in federal law enforcement. Chris, I'd like for you to talk a little bit about an act that I know is near and dear to what you do every day, the FOCUS Act.
Yeah, the FOCUS Act, the fear of overcriminalization and unjust seizures, and there's also a second piece of legislation called the Relief Act, which kind of dealt basically with plants, but the FOCUS Act deals with fish, wildlife, and plants. This piece of legislation that was introduced would severely weaken the oldest and most productive conservation law, federal conservation law in the country, called the Lacey Act, which was introduced to stop the market hunting that was going on back in the 1900s and led to the demise of several species, including the passenger pigeon. We have been very involved, FLIOA, with this. One of the things I did when I was elected as national vice president two terms ago was to create a non-traditional working group, non-traditional meaning all the environment and natural resource agencies. Right out of the gate, as soon as we started creating this non-traditional working group, along comes the FOCUS Act. And what we did was we brought together not only members of FLIOA, but we brought together U.S. Fish and Wildlife, Federal Wildlife Officer Association, which is their internal special agent association. We brought the Refuge Law Enforcement Officers, which are the uniformed officers for Fish and Wildlife Service, and NOAA. And we I had them come to the Hill and help meet with the minority and majority staffs on the Senate side where this bill was first introduced. And then, of course, there was a House complement to this that was also introduced. The Senate side was Senator Paul Rand, and the House side was Congressman Brown out of Georgia. Quite honestly, this bill will be so destructive. First and foremost, it would remove the criminalization of the bill and make it civil. A lot of the laws that we enforce on the civil side, they get horrendous fines. But if people don't pay the fines, and we go through a whole collection process, and you know we have the IRS get involved, if you can't get blood out of a stone, that's the first thing.
No, you know, and then when you talk about civil procedures and proceedings, what comes to mind is there's a lot of due process.
Right.
There's a lot of process due, and you're not able to act immediately to correct. You know, to correct the violation.
And then I guess the second piece of this, which is very troubling, is it would remove the Foreign Commerce Clause. And, you know, there's a lot of concern with the scant resources in the budgets we have today. Why is the United States working on behalf of all of these other foreign nations to enforce their wildlife laws? Well, quite honestly, they don't have the manpower or the resources to do it. And a lot of these species, you know, rhinoceros, the two white and black rhinoceros for their horn, the tigers for their bone, and a number of other species in my area, Chilean sea bass, Patagonia toothfish is imperiled. If we don't have the Lacey Act as a tool mm-hmm. to use under the Foreign Commerce Clause, it could spell extinction for a lot of these species. Mm-hmm. And then finally, and most importantly for us, is it had language in there that would not allow us to carry a firearm in the performance of our enforcing the Lacey Act or executing search or arrest warrants. And for Fish and Wildlife and NOAA, we are working other alternatives right now, but it is the only act that gives the authority to carry a weapon.
That's the part that amazes me the most. I mean, I think the other parts are equally as important, but it's not like you're facing somebody who might not also be armed. I mean, right. When you're going out to take care of some of these issues or to go serve a warrant or do something, you could potentially face somebody who's carrying a firearm.
Well, you know, and we have to take our last break here, but what Chris won't say, because he's an employee of the agency, you know, and I am not, you very rarely see something, you know, titled over-criminalization, unjust seizures, overturning, you know, a law that's been in effect for many, many years, you know, if there's not some significant lobby involved.
Right. And Tony,
that's what's going on here.
The FBI did a study on us, and they said that we're 9 times more likely to be assaulted with a dangerous weapon than a regular police officer, and that's telling right there.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to stop here and take our last break. When we return, we'll wrap up our discussion with FLIOA's Chris Schottmeyer. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're entering the last segment of our show. We've got just a few minutes left here, but if you have a question or a comment, please give us a call on our toll-free number, 1-877-936-9333, or email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. And when we left, we were talking about some of those legislative issues that FLEO has been focusing on. And I know there's one final one you'd like to touch on before we move to a couple other issues.
Yeah, Jenny, just an update on the, you know, on the 9/11 health care bill that was first passed and signed into law. The director of the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health has recognized and reported on the fact that cancer is one of the significant contributors to the, you know, to the problems that have occurred as a result of 9/11 and you know, the obviously the World Trade Center situation.
Right.
Right now, we're hoping that it will have a favorable outcome and that. You know, that the 30-day comment period here, when that's over now, and I think it should be any day, that you will see people that have cancerous-type tumors and things like that that occurred from these 9/11 activities, that they'll be included in the healthcare legislation. I will say quickly with this, last, as we know, it was the 10th anniversary of 9/11. I was down in New York City for an event. And I sat next to a, it was not a federal agent or officer, but I sat next to an NYPD officer, and I sat next to an FDNY Fire Department New York lieutenant. And he showed me a picture of himself and three other people that belonged to a squad. And he's the only surviving member from that squad. All the other members of his squad have died from cancer. Various forms of cancer, and he himself is afflicted with cancer and a nasal type cancer, and his prognosis is not good. So,
and this is one of those unfortunate things that Tony mentioned earlier. Things that seem like they should be easy sells on Capitol Hill or a no-brainer, and this whole 9/11 Act, and you know what's going since then was a hard-fought battle,
right?
Just to get there, and it's still continuing,
right?
Well,
right.
And then, you know, they have issues with causation. You know, a lot of things cause cancer, you know, so that's ongoing. They're just tough issues to deal with.
Yep. And one of the things I'd like to cover is, we only have a few minutes left, if you don't mind, is what my role is in FLEO, or as the National Vice President of Agency Affairs, and a couple of things that I've seen recently that are a little bit troubling. One of those is that,
and these are issues that are specific to different agencies,
right.
You know,
right.
That we see, not necessarily across the board,
right.
In federal law enforcement.
Right. Correct. And you know, for confidentiality reasons, I won't mention the agencies, but two generic issues that I'm concerned about is that several of the law enforcement agency are aggressively moving forward to implement medical and physical standards. And albeit FLEO is not against that, I think, you know, I myself, we've had this program for a while in NOAA. It's probably saved a couple of agents' lives going through the medical, you know, the medical checkups and everything. The question that is on everybody's mind, what do you do with an agent that's been on for 20 or 25 years and he can't pass the physical? And they've moved so quickly to implement these things. They don't have a program, the back end of this program, in place to deal with. How are we going to deal with the agents that don't make it or the officers that don't make it?
Is this agency by agency with the medical
yes.
standards? So
yeah.
There's nothing that's government-wide of how you deal with an 1811, you know, in terms of some sort of standard.
I mean, there are, you need to have the government-wide rule is you need to have medical standards in place before you can implement the physical fitness requirements. Mm-hmm. And, you know, over history, you know, having worked at an agency to how to put this in place,
right.
midterm, you know, it usually, you know, if you don't have the physical standards, you didn't have the medical standards.
Right.
So you have to do both, and I suspect sometimes they're not doing both,
right.
and that could be, you know, a violation of federal law. You know, but it, you know, we talk about legal stuff. At some point, you just gotta use common sense,
right?
and
where do you start it? You know,
yeah.
I mean, if you have an agent that's been on. You know, these are very demanding, rigorous positions, as we all know. You know, again, I'm coming up on 57, and I know I'm not You know, I don't feel the same I did when I was 23. And, you know, I mean, I try to stay in shape and everything. But still, I mean, at some point when you do implement these, I think you'd have to agree, Jennifer and Tony, that, you know, where do you draw the line in the sand? What do you say? Okay, you've been hired and you are now subject to these standards. And if you don't stay within these standards, you know, you're subject to termination. So it's where do you begin the implementation? And a lot of these agencies already have these in place. But it seems to be becoming more aggressive now, and that's one of the issues that we're dealing with our legal team with.
And are you dealing with some best practices or saying just slow down, wait, let's think about everything
right
before you go forward?
Right, and that's what we're working agency by agency with. The second thing that's a little troubling, too, is that there's been a few agencies that, on behalf of the members, we filed the Freedom of Information Act request to get documents that may be impacting our membership for a number of different reasons. And you know, the procedure seems to work well, as it should, because the law is there and the guidelines are there. To the point of where when the agency is required to relinquish those documents and give them to us, the communications ends. And we're going to be pushed into a very tough situation here shortly with a number of agencies that, you know, working with our attorneys, we may have to take legal action for FAA to comply with the FOIA requirements. So
I mean, it's really contrary to President Obama's rule on transparency. You know, that was one of the first executive orders he put out, was about FOIA and encouraging, you know, this disclosure. And then in FOIA, a lot of people don't appreciate it, it's about the public's right to know, right, right to know. You're balancing the public's right to know versus the government's need, you know, to keep something confidential for either privacy reasons or other law enforcement related or classified related reasons.
And you also mentioned one other issue, I think, a little bit about, and this ties into some of the medical standards, I think, a little bit about workforce analysis, right, what's needed, how you deal with that.
And you know, a number of the agencies, because of the tight budgets, and we all know that, you know, this next budget cycle starting in October can be, it's going to be really, really difficult.
Can you say continuing resolution?
Yes.
We've never heard of those, right?
You know, we're just kind of concerned looking at this from a broad perspective that the agencies may be using some of these tools to try and pare down the number of, you know, FTEs they have for whether they be a uniformed law enforcement officer or a special agent, a criminal investigator. And, you know, I just, you know, working with our legal team, we're going to address those issues. But, you know, I see a dangerous precedent happening here. And there's nothing more unprofessional than when you send a email to an agency requesting a meeting and they don't even respond. There's no excuse for that.
Right, right. They should at least, you know, acknowledge. And we should point out, again, you know, FLIO is not a union.
Right.
But that's why it's important that they do respond, is because you're specifically exempted from having union type coverage and being able to have that level of negotiation, again, because you're special,
right,
because you're involved in the law enforcement, you know, function. And we were saying, and so what they said about the, we need to have certain unilateral, you know, rights and directions to be able to take against folks who are involved in national security, you know, and federal law enforcement, you know. And so the flip side of that is, you know, you need to recognize when your employees, you know, are having an issue, right, with what you're doing, because it's gonna have long-term effect with morale. Just because you can do something, you can legally do it unilaterally, doesn't mean you have to do it, and they ought to at least listen.
And you talked about recruitment and retention. That's a big problem,
right,
if that,
right,
happens.
Right. That's all the time we have for the show today. Thanks for a great show, Chris.
Thank you, guys.
And for Jenny and myself, thank you for joining us. And a reminder that Fed Talk is brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Have a great weekend, everyone, and stay cool.